The following podcast contains explicit language.
It's Thursday, March 2nd, 2017. From Slate, it's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca. Perhaps you've heard, but one of the accused assassins of Kim Jong-nam, the estranged... don't have to say that anymore. The no longer estranged half-brother of North Korean leader and scratch golfer Kim Jong-un, she has an explanation for her actions. She claims she thought it was part of a TV prank show. Of all the crazy excuses, wait, that's entirely plausible. Hey, hon, here's the deal. What we need you to do is we need you to take this slightly oily substance, smear it on some guy's face. You might want to wash your hands after. Also, don't Google VX if you can avoid it. Oh, yeah, and you know what? When you're done, just flag a cab. Save the receipt. Now, does this sound like a political assassination or indeed like a prank show? Also, take into account the accused woman's background. Now, let's see. Am I getting this right? You are a world-class political assassin? No? You've been working in massage parlors throughout Asia for the last few years? That's fine. That's good. Now, maybe you're of the generation that gets your pranks from YouTube, and you're always suspicious of the elaborate setup. These days, pranks usually mean a dude gets smacked in the nuts or they fake the whole thing for the video. But there was a time when pranks were a mainstay of prime time. I'm talking pre-punked. There was the show Bloopers, Bleeps, and Blunders, hosted by Steve Allen and Don Rickles. I am not kidding. And for years, Dick Clark and Ed McMahon hosted a bloopers and practical jokes show. I have an old promo here.
Next, it's adults only as the Hee-Haw Honeys share their bloopers, plus practical jokes on Doug Henning and Night Court's John Larroquette.
Oh.
Next.
Sounds good, right? Not just good, but ripe for revival. It's Bloopers, Bleeps, Blunders, and Political Assassinations. Today on Bloopers, Bleeps, Blunders, and Political Assassinations, the fur flies as Tawny Katane argues with a mailbox. Joni might love Chachi, but Chachi doesn't love this wacky water fountain. And why can't the cast of It's a Living get their lines right? Also, retribution is visited upon the enemies of the People's Revolution. You'll see the Bulgarian umbrella gag, the London sushi snafu, the Ukrainian soup foul-up, and of course, the Malaysian airline boner. That's Bloopers, Bleeps, Blunders, and Political Assassinations right after Gimme a Break. On the show today, Joint Session and Jeff Sessions. We'll revisit the Joint Session of Congress address that changed the tone forever and the Jeff Sessions press conference that ruined that lofty prediction, 40 hours later? But first, he's a Pulitzer Prize winning, that's not that funny, Floridian, kind of funny, whose name is Dave Barry. All right, really funny. This episode is brought to you by the Jordan Harbinger Show. You've heard me talk about the Jordan Harbinger Show because it's one of my favorites. He does in-depth interviews with some of the world's most fascinating minds. I can name a few: Barbara Boxer, Anderson Cooper, Michael McFaul, the Ukraine or Russia ambassador talking about Ukraine. One I recently listened to was Stanley McChrystal, the general, the former general, and he told an interesting story about revering Robert E. Lee. But then, after having a portrait of him for 40 years, he's a 63-year-old man, throwing it in the trash. Because his wife says, you know, what that picture and that man means to you, it doesn't mean to other people, and you have to understand that. And then in the interview, they got around to the point where McChrystal talked about that interview in Rolling Stone magazine that pretty much ended his career, where it got to the desk of Barack Obama, and it had McChrystal saying unflattering things about the war effort and just how he talked to his wife and how they decided not to be bitter and not to wallow in it. He could have taken some shots at the process, the reporter, or the president at that point, but he didn't. It was just an overall good interview. It was facilitated by Jordan's excellent interview style. Whether Jordan is conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you will find something useful that can apply to your own life in every single episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way, or discovering a little mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R, like the first three letters in hard, B-I-N-G-E, as in how you'll want to catch up on all the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Dave Barry is a Pulitzer Prize winning columnist who's written, by my count, 348 books. Most of them have a subtext of Florida, but now, as with all great writers, the subtext becomes text. Best State Ever. This is also Dave Barry's first book with three periods in the title. A Florida Man Defends His Homeland. Dave Barry, thank you, Dave, for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I have a grand theory of why Florida is picked on. I know you do, too. This is your book. But mine rests on the fact that everything is so fraught in terms of what you can make fun of, what you can't make fun of, who gets up in arms, what a seemingly innocuous joke is meant to be, but really, oh no, it's a microaggression. I think making fun of a state is maybe one of the safe spaces we still have as a society.
I agree with that completely, and making fun of Florida is especially safe, because if you, there's a lot of states, I'm just going to pick one at random, like Missouri or Arkansas. These are states, I'm not saying any particular, but people have a certain amount of pride in them. Why, I don't know. They were born there, basically, which is not really much of an accomplishment, but people think, well, yeah, I'm from Missouri, show me, you know, or whatever they say, you know, or Arkansas, they go, I've seen them do this, they go, see me! And they're proud of it. They're very proud of it. Florida has none of that. We have no state pride in the state of Florida, and we're proud of that fact. Everybody came here from somewhere else. I came here from somewhere else. There's about eight people that are actually born and raised in the state of Florida, and they all hate what it's become. So there's no pride at all. So when people make fun of Florida, the rest of us here in Florida go, yeah, we're a bunch of idiots, that's for sure. We don't. So we're like a really convenient punching bag. We earn it. We own it. And we don't get all upset about it. We're not like one of those sensitive states.
Yeah, and Florida's big enough, and you find this in California. Maybe Texas is the exception. We'll get to that in a second. But California, New York, Illinois. There's no one state. Like, people don't have Illinois pride. They have Chicago pride or New York.
How could you have Illinois pride? To be honest, really.
Aren't they the WNBA team? No, but I think that Florida is at odds with itself. And when you said suey, this is the call of the Arkansas Razorbacks. When a state is small enough, they have, you know, pretty much one big college football team. But you have all these college football teams at each other's throats. So if someone tries
loathe, like down here in Miami, we loathe the Florida Gators. Yeah. So there you go. Yeah, and you're right. And we are 53 different states anyway. Like Miami, where I live, is Latin America. But if you go just 30, 40 miles north here to like Boca, you're in Long Island, you know, where everybody all, you know, basically gets up in the morning and complains all day long about that you can't get good pizzas here, you know, that kind of people, and root for the Jets and everything. And then you go across the state to Naples. Everybody's from Ohio. Everybody. And you know, they're all going to dinner at 4:30 p.m. at the Olive Garden. And then farther north, it becomes Orlando, which is, you know, people from everywhere. Then farther north than that, it becomes the South. It becomes basically North Florida is Alabama and Georgia. So it's, and we all hate each other. You know, we all kind of united in loathing for the other sections of the state.
But I will read to you, this was the you know, the states do their brags during the political convention. And the Democratic convention, it was a pretty straightforward. We got Bill Nelson. But here's what the Florida delegation said during the Republican convention to brag about the state of Florida. Home to Disney World, the Daytona 500, and the Florida Keys, no state income tax, and our residents enjoy over 600 miles of pristine beaches, leaving out the 80 miles of disgusting beaches.
We are home to over 1.5 million veterans, and we make it a point to thank them every day. We are the state that gave LeBron James his first two championships.
Your critique of this statement.
Claim credit. And Charles Lindbergh flew over the state several times. Oh man, I missed that. I was at that convention. I was at both conventions, and I didn't hear that. And I'm really kind of blue about it.
It may be because it's a big obligation to thank 1.5 million veterans every day,
and we have to thank them by name. That's the thing.
Yeah,
and, you know, even at like 2 seconds per veteran, that's a lot of 3 million seconds every day spent thanking the veterans, and we do thank them. So yeah, it's a busy, busy time down here.
If you distribute them over the 600 miles of beaches, it's like, you know, it comes out to like 20,000 veterans a beach or something like that.
Really, one of the only true things or really meaningful statements in that list was the no state income tax thing, which we have no state income tax, which is a tremendous benefit. What do we get in return for that? What kind of government? We get corrupt, incompetent government down here. But as I point out in the book, California also has corrupt, incompetent government, and they have really high income tax, as does New York, as does Illinois. So we're getting the same government for way less money down here, which is why we have time to thank the veterans.
But what about government services? Like, I remember when this bullet train was supposed to be
any year now, yeah. We're going to finish that. It's going to be based on magnetism, I believe.
And I believe the stations aren't really well thought out in terms of people, but in terms of electoral district.
I moved here in 86, and not long after I got here, they finished a thing called the Metro Rail, mm-hmm. which was going to be our high-speed rail, or it's actually pretty low-speed rail, but it's rail, and it's an elevated train that goes all over Miami. The problem was it was designed entirely based on where politicians wanted stations to be, as opposed to where people might want to actually get on a train and get off a train. The result being that, of course, it never got within a tenth of the estimates for the ridership. A lot of us don't know how to get up on that thing. We see it go overhead. We know, like, we need like a ladder or something to get up there. We don't even know where the stations are, let alone how to get in and use it.
Maybe there's a parallel universe just occurring, 18 feet in the air. Like, there is actually no on point.
This is not totally relevant, but we also have a people mover in downtown Miami, which goes in a circle. Mm-hmm. And one time a few years ago, two homeless guys caught a nurse shark, a 6-foot nurse shark in Biscayne Bay, right, which is right downtown. And they wanted to sell it to a fish wholesaler. They, for some reason, thought that somebody would want to buy this nurse shark, mm-hmm. but they didn't have any transportation. They're homeless. So they took it onto the people mover, which is not designed for marine life. That's why we call it the people mover. And this shark was not 100% dead at the time. It was still moving and and it was rush hour. And I found out about this because the person I know was on that train and sent me a picture. She took it with her phone, said there's a live shark on the people mover. And tragically, it didn't attack anybody, but that would have been the ultimate Miami story if we'd had a shark attack on the people mover.
Is a nurse shark a destructive or nurturing animal? I never heard that name.
I've been told, I'm not a shark guy, but I've been told that even though it's called a nurse shark, which sounds like a really kind of a friendly kind of shark,
yeah,
like a nun shark, a nurse shark, mm-hmm.
Preschool teacher shark.
Yeah. It actually will bite you if it, I don't know if it would go out its way to bite you, but it will bite you.
So a nurse ratchet type shark.
Yeah.
So you had a friend, they take a picture, she takes a picture of the shark on the people mover, send it to you. Of course, you got to send it to Dave Barry. But this isn't just people you know personally. Basically, everyone in America, when something weird happens about Florida, you are inundated with this, right?
Right. Yes, I am sort of a central clearinghouse for Florida things. Or also toilet things. If a toilet explodes, mm-hmm. anywhere in the world, I'm going to hear about it pretty quickly, probably ahead of whatever federal agency is responsible for that. Also, if a snake appears in the toilet, which you would not believe how often that happens, I'm going to hear about that as well, very quickly.
It's good to have a brand, and it's good to have a niche.
Yeah, it's good. It's why I'm here, and I'm happy to help.
Could you tell me about the Mold-O-Matic scale that you invented for this book?
Yeah, the Mold-O-Matic is and most people who've been to tourist attractions have seen these things. It looks like a jukebox. It's a big machine, and it says, make your own souvenir, and you put in money. Now, the current going price in Florida is about $2. You feed in $2, and there's all this hissing and pneumatic noises and heat and everything, and it produces what looks like a lot of mucus shaped like allegedly whatever it is that the tourist attraction is. Like, if there's a mermaid tourist attraction down here, it's a mermaid, or an alligator attraction is an alligator. The thing is, they never work. The Mold-O-Matic machine, I always think, like, sometime back in the 50s, a really good salesman went through and sold these things to everybody in Florida. Every tourist attraction in Florida had one, but none of them work. And so I went around and in fact, they may come from the factory with a hand lettered sign that says, sorry, out of order. order. Maybe they never worked. I don't know. But I did find one in my travels through Florida on writing this book that actually worked. It was in a place called Gatorland, and it did produce a guy wrestling an alligator, which, just for the record, wrestling an alligator means sitting on the back of the alligator while the alligator wonders why. You know, that's really what alligator wrestling consists of. But that was the only one I found. But I ranked the tourist attractions that I visited by out-of-order Mold-O-Matic machines on a scale of 1 to 5 out-of-order Mold-O-Matics.
What got the 5 Mold-O-Matic?
It was a place in Miami called Lock and Load where you can shoot machine guns. They let you rent machine guns and shoot them. And I had so much adrenaline. I think I gave it 6, even though the scale is 1 to 5. That's how wired I was when I walked out of Lock and Load, Miami.
I want to ask you about a couple of Florida personalities that I've always been compelled by. One is Claude Pepper. If people don't know who Claude Pepper is, he is...
I could do a very good Claude Pepper imitation. This is what Senator Pepper... He always went to refer to himself as Senator Pepper because he served one term in the United States Senate. And his wife was named Midrid. And he always called Midrid and I... Anyway, Claude Pepper was a legendary... ancient man. He was born hundreds of years old, and the older he got, the more he got reelected every time by old people down here. And his whole thing was, you know, looking out for the senior citizens. But we had a guy at the Miami Herald named Bill Rose who did a terrific Claude Pepper impersonation, even better than the one that I've been doing on this radio show, if you can imagine that, on this podcast. And people used to call up the Miami Herald just to hear Bill Rose do his Claude Pepper imitation. He was really good. Well, one day, he's at the main news desk, and the actual Claude Pepper called the Miami Herald, as he had done a couple times, but, you know, complaining about something. And the switchboard operator put him through to Bill Rose, and Bill hears this voice on the other end going, "This is Senator Pepper." And Bill, assuming that this is somebody making a joke, goes, "No, this is Senator Pepper." Those were the days. That's back when we had newspapers and switchboard operators.
Yeah.
And Claude Pepper was still alive. He might still be alive. He already died, but he might still be serving in Congress.
I think he is. I think he lives on that realm of the 18-foot high train that we talked about.
That's
his version of heaven. So the last thing I want to ask you about Florida is the idea of catharsis or contagion, which is with many phenomena in life, like let's say violence on television. There are some researchers that will tell you, well, if kids watch violence, they see it in a fictionalized form and they don't get violent. But then other people will tell you that actually some kids get more violent. The same with NFL players, right? NFL players will say, well, I beat someone up on Sunday. I don't need to do it. Except with some of them, it becomes a contagion and their life becomes violent. How come with the weirdness of Florida and the embrace of weirdness, it's not like all those museums and the Mold-O-Matic, it's not Florida working itself out of, the weirdness works itself out of Florida's system. It just seems to build upon the weirdness. It's a contagion model.
Down here. Yeah. But I contend that partly it's because it's just we seem to tolerate it down here. But also, people are attracted to it. Like, say you're a guy who, you know, what you want to do is you want to get really, really high on meth and then pleasure yourself in a stuffed animal in a Walmart. You're going to go to Florida to do that. Oh. You're going to find your way down here to have to make that happen, as opposed to being in, like, Zanesville, Ohio. You'd stand out in Zanesville. Down here, like, you probably have to, you know, take a number to find a room in the stuffed animal department of Walmart to be doing that.
Yeah. People are just worried about the nurse shark on the people mover. No one cares about you and the stuffed animal.
We don't judge. We don't judge. I always say we're like the Ellis Island for weird, stupid people.
Best State Ever is the name of the book. A Florida man defends his homeland. That man is and was Dave Barry. Thank you, Dave.
My pleasure.
I know you listen to podcasts. I can prove it. You just heard me say that. And unless you're actually in the room with me, get out of here, Dave. Unless you're Dave, you know how to listen to podcasts. Now, I'm sure you want to spread the joy of podcasts. Or maybe you're the kind of person who only likes the bands that no one else likes. And then when they book big clubs, they're like, oh, I used to like them on their first album. We're still in the first album phase of this media. But we do have to grow it. Because remember, that band that you wanted to keep to yourself, they could break up due to lack of interest. So this is where the Tripod campaign comes in. All this month, you want to find a friend, relative, a curious stranger. Okay, that could be fraught. And show them how to try podcasts. Hello, are you a stranger? You are a curious stranger. Let me show you my iPhone now. Okay, just take it, you know, pump the brakes on curious stranger a little. But get this person who you think or suspect might like podcasts. And then share your story on Twitter with the hashtag TryPod. Okay, so you do whatever you can to get a new be into podcasting, but then afterwards you tweet about it and you do TRY pod, hashtag TRY pod. Together we could delete podcast unawareness. And now the spiel. Yesterday we aired a story about a woman and a monkey, kind of a fable, really. It might have said something about Donald Trump's speech to the joint session of Congress, maybe. Many commentators, TV commentators, after that speech called it Trump's best ever. I think that's fair. Others went further, like Dana Perino and Chris Steigerwald on Fox, and they said he reset his presidency. Van Jones on CNN went all wobbly, saying he became president, and Chris Wallace on Fox agreed.
I feel like tonight, Donald Trump became the president of the United States.
The thing about Wallace claiming Trump became president with that great speech is that Wallace didn't exactly go all Statler and Waldorf on Trump's inaugural address.
Donald Trump seizing power in the sense that there's a new sheriff in town, and he made that very clear. He made it clear that he thinks that the country is really on the wrong track. I mean, there was one very powerful line there, the American carnage.
Okay, so I guess you could argue that Trump jumped from sheriff to president, so Wallace wasn't contradicting himself. But what really happened was Trump gave a normal-ish speech with more of the rhetoric of hope than the rhetoric of carnage, and the media, desperate to show that they still have an open mind on the whole unsettled Trump question, fell over themselves to say, there you go, good boy. These are the types of people who were actually crestfallen when Trump canceled from the White House Correspondents' Dinner. On the other hand, I am glad that a lot of the talking heads and the public polling said good job, because there should be some positive feedback mechanism for when he doesn't lie or attack institutions or just yell the whole time. Not that there weren't hideous parts of the address before the joint session. The government is apparently hiring a team of publicists to tell stories of immigrants who commit crimes. It's the Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement Office, or VOICE. I have applied for a job within its special division, the Homeland Office of Maligning Belizeans and Ecuadorians, or OMBRE. So I'm glad Trump got some good feedback. I'm glad a lot of it, and this was a good point by Virginia Heffernan on Trumpcast, I'm glad a lot of the print media saw through the tone and said, these are still some terrible ideas. But the dumbest thing that the media said was it gave itself the out that, you know, maybe Trump won't be good the whole time. He'll only have this glow until his next Twitter outburst. No, that's passive. It doesn't last until he decides to tweet something stupid. It lasts until he is made to answer for any of the huge, unanswerable questions of his administration. Three big ones are, how are you going to replace healthcare? Are you going to actually divest your businesses? And what relationship do you and did you have with the Russians? Those are questions that always set him off, because he doesn't have a good answer for them. What he does is he attacks the questioner and sets up smokescreens. So here we have today, less than 2 days after he crushed it before the joint session, he is getting crushed by Jeff Sessions. Sessions recused himself today from investigating the campaign's involvement with the Russians. Trump said Sessions doesn't need to recuse himself. Sessions said, yeah, I do. And he gave this explanation why.
They don't know the rules, the ethics rules. Most people don't.
Let's remember that for other areas, too. Now, to recap, here is the exchange between Sessions and Senator Al Franken at Sessions' confirmation hearing.
If there is any evidence that anyone affiliated with the Trump campaign communicated with the Russian government in the course of this campaign, what will you do?
Senator Franken, I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians, and I'm unable to comment on it.
Very well.
And here was Sessions' excuse for mistaking that he actually did meet with the Russian ambassador.
In retrospect, if I should have slowed down and said, but I did meet one Russian official a couple of times, that would be the ambassador.
Jeff Sessions should have slowed down. Yeah, maybe just not lied. All right, I want to be fair. He may not have lied. That comments on intentionality that I can't know. And in fact, he may not have had political discussions with the ambassador. And the report that you've been hearing about another contact he had after a speech at the Heritage Foundation, where the Russian ambassador spoke to several senators. Well, I think the most nefarious part of that sentence is the Heritage Foundation. So recusal from further investigation seems wise. Impeachment, perjury. Right now, I think that is too far from where the evidence is. However, clamoring about impeachment and declaring where there's smoke, there's fire, well, that's probably a smart political play, as the last 8 years of politics have proved. That's it for today's show. Just producer Mary Wilson welcomed Ambassador Kislyak into her office, but only remembers talking about church group itineraries from 1985. When Chris Brube, GIST producer, answered Senator Franken's question, he was distracted because he couldn't get that Stuart Smalley guy out of his mind. Wait, whenever you talk, I hear good enough and smart. It's just funny. Executive producer of Slate podcast Steve Lickteig gets a little testy when the issue of Ukraine comes up. Andy Bowers, chief content officer of the Panoply Network, says, Steve, Chris, Mary, they can all stay. But then again, he doesn't know the ethics rules. If you do. The GIST. Recusing myself from all Twilight movies since 2009. Un Peru, De Peru, Du Peru, and thanks for listening.